and the only way to win was to get 10 points, but also be up by 2 points. Also imagine that this match was so complicated and preposterous that even this company, which never learned from its mistakes, never bothered to try it again. Promoting something called a Dup Cup tournament, wherein you received points for, among other things, goosing a woman, sticking a person's head in a toilet, and using a farm animal or a blow-up doll as a weapon, and where you could lose points for openly weeping. Also never tried again. Promoting an NWA title change via DQ, since the original rules were that such could happen, but then eventually forgetting that rule, doing DQs in title matches, not changing the title, and never bothering to explain the change to fans. Promoting repeated War Games matches, where the babyfaces start with the man advantage, completely destroying the most basic wrestling psychology imaginable. Allowing Roddy Piper to go to the ring with a live mic and ask Vince Russo on national television, "Did you kill Owen Hart?" Developing a faction called SEX, which stood for Sports Entertainment Extreme, the latter word of which does not, in fact, start with the letter X. Airing shots of the announcers, wherein said announcers were unaware they were being filmed, and thus basically read word for word from the script in front of a national TV audience. Booking various wrestling Elvises, various NASCAR stars, and various country music performers solely due to being based in Nashville, Tennessee, and never successfully getting any of them over to a national television audience. Hiring Eric Watts in 2003. Airing an angle in 2003 where Jeff Jarrett attacked Hulk Hogan at a Japanese press conference, setting the stage for Hulk Hogan's debut 7 years later in 2010. Airing the Hulk Hogan-Jeff Jarrett angle all over television while Hogan was busy re-debuting in WWE. Hiring Johnny Fairplay of Survivor fame, based solely on the fact that the president of the company was a big Survivor fan, paying him $150,000 for the first year, wherein he made 8 appearances for a total of 40 minutes of work, and then re-signing him at $150,000 for a second year, wherein he made 0 appearances for a total of 0 minutes of work. Hiring this man during a period when numerous employees made it known that they made so little money in the company that they were forced to take second jobs, and one of them, Taylor Wilde, was so embarrassed when a fan recognized her as the women's champion while working a minimum wage job at the Sunglass Hut that she quit the wrestling company the next day. Hiring Dusty Rhodes to book in 2005. Booking an Ultimate X match where the X hanging above the ring was not secured properly so that, in the middle of the match, it fell down and they had to get a ladder to hang it back up. Claiming when the X fell down in an Ultimate X match, that the X had to be rehung, and that you could not win if the X fell off the cables, and then, 5 minutes later, when the X fell off the cables a second time, awarding the match to the man who caught it. Following the death of Chris Candido due to a blood clot following surgery complications, his girlfriend, Tammy Sitch, claimed the company, sent her his last paycheck in his name, which of course could not be cashed since he was deceased. When she asked the company to resend it in her name, they refused. According to Sitch, they did, however, send her a condolence gift, a boneless fucking ham. Creating a drug policy that included a list of prohibited substances and drug testing, but which did not include any actual penalties. This was convenient, as when 60 wrestlers were tested in 2007, it later came out in a report to the Congressional Committee on Oversight and Government Reform that 26 tested positive for drugs, 15 tested positive for steroids, and 0 were punished. Hiring Kurt Angle immediately after WWE fired him over concern that he was a major health risk. Angle went on to be arrested 4 separate times as of summer 2013 during his career, mostly for DWI offenses. He finally checked into rehab of his own volition after the 4th arrest. Creating a convoluted Undertaker-slash-Kane-style storyline that involved Sinister Minister Jim Mitchell being, we think, the father of Judas Messias and Abyss, which, based on our calculations, would have required Mitchell to have become a father at the age of 9. hiring Adam Pac-Man Jones, who nobody outside of Tennessee had ever even heard of. He was a Tennessee Titans football player. Unless, of course, they were aware of the Las Vegas strip club shooting incident that he was allegedly involved in, which left a former pro wrestler paralyzed. He was suspended from the Titans for a year, the first time in 44 years that a player had been suspended for anything other than substance abuse, at which point it was decided that this would be a great time to hire him for pro wrestling. Despite the fact that his football contract allowed him to appear on TV, but not to get involved in any physical angles in any way, he somehow managed to win and lose the tag team titles. Expecting Pac-Man Jones to boost ratings and draw mainstream attention, only to have his debut do 20% lower than the regular TV average, and the mainstream media articles on the story note that this was, swear to God, a step down for Pac-Man Jones. Booking something called a Doomsday Chamber of Blood match. Try to follow along. It was a cage match, and to make sure nobody could climb out, barbed wire was put around the top to shred anyone who dared to enter. The only way to win is via pinfall. However, you can pin a guy 1,000 times and it doesn't count, because in order to be eligible to be pinned, you must first bleed. Then, the first guy to pin someone who is bleeding gets a future championship match against the winner of another match that has yet to take place. As Jim Cornette attempted to explain, it's really quite simple. Yep, sure is. Having an announcer claim that an Asian female's finishing hold was called the happy ending, a stereotypical Asian massage parlor masturbation reference. Hiring one of the prettiest girls on the independent scene, cheerleader Melissa of Southern California, and giving her a Muslim gimmick that involved covering her entire body head to toe in a hijab robe. Hiring a swimsuit model named Brooke Adams, best known for her amazing, award-winning, no joke, posterior, and sending her out every week in skirts that completely obscured said posterior. Pushing Sting as a top star in his 50s. Trying to recreate Goldberg with an unknown wrestler named Crimson, a man with neither the physical gifts of Goldberg nor anything resembling his charisma. By trying to get him over with an undefeated streak deep in the mid-card, and after 400 days when it was clearly not working, booking him to lose and then immediately taking him off TV pretty much forever. Booking a preposterous angle, where one wrestler apparently killed another wrestler with a machete, which resulted in the latter wrestler's Wikipedia page being updated to report that he was dead as a result of being killed with a machete. The latter wrestler, Scott Steiner, was back on TV a week later with no injuries whatsoever. Billing a man as undefeated, even though he somehow had already lost 2 world championships. Booking a match between 2 undefeated wrestlers, where the stipulation was that neither's winning streak was on the line. Hiring Jenna Maraska, also, coincidentally, from Survivor, 5 years earlier, for an alleged $500,000, an investment that paid off in the form of quite possibly the single worst match in the entire history of professional wrestling with Booker T's wife, Charmel, on live pay-per-view. Signing Jeff Hardy and giving him the world title during a time when Jeff Hardy was facing charges of trafficking in controlled prescription pills and possession of anabolic steroids, charges to which a year later he pleaded guilty, for which he was fined $100,000 and spent 10 days in jail. Sending Jeff Hardy to the ring during this period to work a pay-per-view main event when it was clear he was in no condition to perform. Booking 3 Montreal-style screw jobs in a 1-year period, all involving Earl Hebner, all over a decade after the Montreal screw job, all not meaning a single solitary thing for business. Hiring Hulk Hogan as a top star in his 50s. Spending the last months of 2009 pushing Hogan's debut virtually the exact same way WCW pushed Hogan's debut in 1994, 15 years earlier. Hiring Eric Bischoff as an executive and consultant. His first TV appearance involved him publicly tearing up the script, which backfired both creatively Fans booed Hogan a few segments later, even though he was supposed to be the babyface savior. And in real life, as security had to go into the crowd and find the pieces of the script he tore up, since it was the actual script for the show. Hiring, among others, the Nasty Boys, who could not even cut promos without getting tired, and Bubba the Love Sponge, best known for being the center of controversy when a sex tape was leaked of Hogan having sex with Bubba's wife, filmed in Bubba's home, a situation that destroyed their friendship and, according to Hogan, ruined his life. Looking an angle where a man in a Sting mask attacked RVD and was then unmasked, revealing, in the ultimate non-swerve, Sting! Firing female wrestler Awesome Kong after she beat the holy hell out of Bubba the Love Sponge backstage in what Hulk Hogan called one of the worst beatings he'd ever seen in his life. Kong was involved in Haiti earthquake relief efforts, and Bubba had tweeted, "Fuck Haiti." Suffice to say, this enraged Kong. Believing the pro wrestling landscape in 2010 was the same as the pro wrestling landscape in 1995, and deciding the best course of action would be to run head-to-head with Raw on Monday nights, a decision that led to the biggest smashing in the history of head-to-head pro wrestling competition, and resulted in a move back to their original night after losing at its lowest point 48% of its viewers and doing an anemic 0.6 rating. Booking a spot where Homicide gave Rob Terry a ridiculously hard, unprotected chair shot to the head on national television, exactly 2 days after former WCW star Chris Kanyon, who had written in the past about how he believed Chris Benoit killed himself and his family as a result of multiple concussions throughout his career, and who himself claimed to have suffered at least 12 concussions, committed suicide with a drug overdose. Booking a gigantic, and we mean gigantic, female training student named Rosie Lotta-Love into a match with 100-pound former WCW star Daphne, which resulted in Daphne being severely injured in a spot gone awry that essentially ended her wrestling career. The company refused to pay for her hospitalizations, which resulted in a very bitter lawsuit that was eventually settled out of court for an undisclosed sum. Having Orlando Jordan spray himself with a white, milky substance that resembled semen while looking on longingly at Rob Terry. This following Jordan's real life coming out as a bisexual. Hiring during a time where many wrestlers were working second jobs to make ends meet, and one publicly tweeted about being on food stamps, both Jay Wow and Angelina of Jersey Shore, for $15,000 per appearance, and then booking them in segments head-to-head with the real Jersey Shore, an unsuccessful strategy. During this same period, spending God knows how much money to put up a Wrestling Matters billboard in Stamford, Connecticut, home of WWE, of which no discernible value was ever gauged. Naming a weapon, a barbed wire baseball bat, after the president of the company's mother. Booking television programs that, at their peak, saw only 6 minutes, 360 seconds of professional wrestling action in a 2-hour period. Shooting an angle where Bischoff was held hostage in his office by a bird. He was held hostage by a bird because Sting was concerned that he would interfere in a match that just happened to be taking place inside a steel cage that was surrounded by babyface lumberjacks. Hyping a, quote, revolutionary rankings system for weeks, which, upon its debut, made absolutely no sense and was immediately forgotten about. Hiring Kazuchika Okada, one of the best young workers in all of Japanese pro wrestling, and calling him O-Kato and giving him a Green Hornet Bruce Lee comedy gimmick. Rebooking the 1996 Bash at the Beach, where Hulk Hogan turned heel, in 2010, with Hogan once again turning heel, to create a modern-day NWO consisting of Hogan, Bischoff, Abyss, and Jeff Hardy, an angle so successful that in 2014, it's likely even the most hardcore fan forgot it ever happened. Doing a storyline where Abyss told Hulk Hogan and Jeff Hardy that an anonymous they were coming, They proceeded to lay waste to them both in storyline on 6 shows over the next 4 months. And then they ended up being, among others, Abyss, Jeff Hardy, and Hulk Hogan. Instituting a rule where X Division matches could only be contested under 3-way rules, making it impossible to ever develop any sort of meaningful singles, feuds, or championship programs. Dropping this rule less than 6 months later and doing a complete 180, saying that X Division matches would only be contested under 1-on-1 rules, apparently rendering their most popular match, the Multi-Man Ultimate X, a thing of the past. Immediately dropping that rule as well. Falling victim to the most amazing trivia note, when X Division wrestler Brian Kendrick appeared on the new Price is Right with Drew Carey, and of the two of them, one of them was a WWE Hall of Famer, and it wasn't Brian Kendrick. Rotating talent in and out to cut costs, seemingly without alerting the writing crew, resulting in wrestlers winning titles on pay-per-view and then not appearing on TV for the next month. Historically treating their women such that when they contacted a bunch of former talents to appear on a taped women's-only pay-per-view, 9 of the women asked told them to shove it. Booking a pay-per-view main event with no finish, wherein the ref called for the bell after the champion was chokeslammed through the ring, it was determined that this was not a title change, even though the champion could not continue, and then, to quote, send the crowd home happy, they had 3 more wrestlers take pratfalls into the hole. Putting the X title, which for years had largely been built around smaller wrestlers, on the Monster Abyss, famous for being way more than 300 pounds. Shortly thereafter, it was announced that the X division would now have a 225-pound weight limit. It was barely a year before 280-pound Samoa Joe was challenging for the belt. Putting one half of the women's tag team titles on Eric Young. While we cannot personally confirm his sexual status, Young did ultimately admit on television that he was not, in fact, a woman. This revelation led to him being stripped of said belt 478 days after he and ODB had won them. Creating an online voting system where fans could choose who the next title contender would be, only to have Desmond Wolfe, who Bischoff did not want to win, get the landslide victory 2 weeks in a row. Bischoff's response was to have Wolfe lose repeatedly on TV and then blame the fans for taking advantage of his own poll, which allowed multiple votes. The voting was then dropped, never to be mentioned again. Creating a concept called Gut Check, wherein independent wrestlers fought to win a contract with the company, and after winning the contract, they were sent to Kentucky, almost never heard from again, and ultimately cut. Signing a wrestler they didn't want to sign in Gut Check, after Judge Ric Flair decided he actually liked the wrestler and thought he cut a good promo, so he went off script and voted yes instead of no, resulting in the company being forced to give him a contract. The wrestler, Alex Silva, was immediately sent to Kentucky, seen once or twice thereafter, and then cut. Booking a Bound for Glory series months-long tournament where, in its inaugural year, perhaps in an homage to killing off Goldberg's heat in WCW, wrestlers were booked to face other wrestlers completely at random, competed in a completely random number of matches. One wrestler, for example, worked 19 matches total, and another only worked 12, God knows why, and randomly racked up points. And then, at the end of the day, changing the finish of the finale on the day of the show. Booking a Bound for Glory series months-long tournament where, in its 3rd year, in a tournament scheduled to have 66 total matches, they suddenly discovered that they only had 3 shows left to run 30 matches, and thus just threw everything out the window and wrapped it up the following week on television. Booking a championship match after Bobby Roode won the title with challenger Samoa Joe, best known for just coming off a Bound for Glory series run where he lost every single match in the tournament and racked up minus 10 points. Booking an angle where Hulk Hogan, arguably the biggest star in the long and storied history of professional wrestling, announced his retirement on television only to draw a 1.01 rating for the show, the lowest of the entire year. Booking Hogan's return to wrestling 1 week later. Pushing Garrett Bischoff, with no wrestling experience outside of some training with Team 3D, and no qualifications outside of being Eric Bischoff's son, as a star member of the company's top heel group. Pushing Brooke Hogan, with no wrestling qualifications whatsoever outside of being Hulk Hogan's daughter, as the general manager and mouthpiece of the women's division, despite her inability to cut anything resembling a successful promo on live television. Allowing Hulk Hogan to do a backstage promo, where he says, in part, quote, "No wonder this company was in the shape it's in. It's time to get rid of the trash, the garbage, the worthless piece of crap out here. And we started with Dixie Carter. Yeah, we're getting very real around here. We are so real, it's unbelievable. Because if you don't get over, like I said, you're fired. If you don't draw a number, if you don't entertain, if you don't put asses in seats, if you don't put the coinage in the piggy bank, you're fired. No more games, no more kayfabe, it's a work, I've won 34 tag team belts. Who gives a damn how many fake belts you won? If you don't draw money, you get fired around here. If you don't put asses in seats, you're gone." Having to end a love triangle slash affair slash something or other storyline early because the actor they chose to play the character, Claire Lynch, quit the company when fans figured out who she really was. Julia Riley, an actress who also played Olive Oil at the Popeye ride at the same theme park where they shot television. Apparently, Riley didn't think any of the 1 million-plus national cable television viewers would ever be able to put two and two together. Shooting an angle during that feud where Serge Salinas, whose wrestling background consisted of him being the husband of Dixie, punched out AJ Styles, a multiple-time world champion and top star. Allowing Eric Bischoff to convince management that they needed to leave their longtime theme park home because everyone knows you can't run shows in the same building week after week, year after year, despite the fact that throughout history, wrestling promotions have very successfully managed to run the same buildings month after month, year after year, drawing thousands and thousands of paying fans. Leaving their long-term theme park home to shoot television exclusively from the road, despite a massive increase in costs, with absolutely zero additional revenue being brought in to offset those costs, and absolutely no increase in television ratings whatsoever since, at the end of the day, TV viewers do not, in fact, care where a television show is emanating from. Later concluding that, in fact, they could not afford the massive increase in costs, with absolutely zero additional revenue being brought in to offset these costs, and attempting to go back to their old longtime theme park home, only to discover that their longtime theme park home had been rented out to someone else and they could no longer get in there. Dragging their feet on contract negotiations and having several wrestlers' contracts expire while they were in the middle of big storylines, including the tag team and women's tag team champions on various occasions. Shooting an angle where for a few weeks you, the television viewer, could hear Jeff Hardy's thoughts. Disappointingly, he never had anything interesting to think. Shooting an angle where a masked wrestler named Suicide gets his costume stolen, at which point Hulk Hogan brings him out on stage, unmasked, so we can see what he looks like, and alerts us that his name is TJ Perkins. Perkins proceeds to do all of his interviews backstage unmasked, but for inexplicable reasons still wrestles in the ring as a masked man named Manic. Logic behind this is never explained. Creating an action figure for Dixie Carter, the company president, which wrestlers backstage immediately take photos of in compromising positions with the Vince McMahon action figure. Firing 10 employees, one of whom, Jesse Sorensen, had his neck broken on live pay-per-view, nearly died, and was promised a job for life. And then that same week, thinking it's a good idea to set up a hashtag Ask Dixie Twitter question and answer session, which is ultimately deluged with thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of negative comments about Dixie and the company. Booking a house show in Missouri, where six of the wrestlers, including the current world heavyweight champion, aren't licensed to wrestle in the state. Promoting big debuts, including that of Tito Ortiz, one of the biggest draws in the history of UFC, exclusively on the internet, as opposed to on their national cable television show, which is seen by over 1 million viewers. Booking an angle where, in Hulk Hogan's last night ever in the company, Dixie gets on her knees and grabs his leg and begs him not to leave as he drags her up the ramp and out the door. Booking an angle where, in AJ Styles' last night ever in the company, he runs wild as triumphant babyface in his match with champion Magnus, and it takes over a half dozen heels to finally beat him. Booking an angle where, in Sting's last night ever in the company, he runs wild as triumphant babyface in his title match with champion Magnus. This, by the way, happened after Sting had lost a match a year earlier, where the stipulation was that he could never challenge for the title again, and it takes over a half dozen heels to finally beat him. And that's after he got two visual pinfalls over Magnus. Booking a storyline where, after all of these big stars leave the company, for real, Dixie Carter is pushed as an incompetent owner who is killing the company with her stupidity. Is it really possible that all this could happen? Can you imagine? Sadly, these bullet points are just the tip of the iceberg. But the true story of the idiocy of TNA Impact Wrestling will be told another day.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Death of WCW, written by R.D. Reynolds and Brian Alvarez, performed by Brian Alvarez, producer Mike Charzik, copyright 2014 R.D. Reynolds and Brian Alvarez, production copyright 2016 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.